Coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware, Hackintosh build for OMG Chad, Borderlands 2 physics testing, AMD's 5800K APU benchmark, Samsung's 840, Let's Talk TLC. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 189, recorded October 4th, 2012. Build a better Hackintosh. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Gordon, and this is the show that aims to bring you the most important news in computer hardware, a little bit of the tablet lifestyle, and of course, we love your viewer questions. We answer them in each and every show. This show has a very special viewer question coming from Chad of the brightly colored hair. We'll have him on a little bit later. But right now, let us bring you Mr. Ryan Shrout from PCPer.com. How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. How are you? I spent the first part of my day digging holes for trees. So
awesome.
Can only get more exciting after that.
Was this like an Arbor Day project? Are you greening the community, or did
it was,
your wife
it was
say,
a
like,
my wife's day project and really didn't have anything to do with any national holidays though.
Yeah. Good thing. What kind of trees did you plant?
Weeping willow and cherry.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, yeah. Are you feeling very sort of green thumbish today? You just feeling?
No. Instead, I feel like I wish I had worn leather gloves when I was digging the holes because my hands feel pretty raw. We do have to dig through a lot of clay here. We don't have, it's like you get like 6 inches of topsoil and then you get thick clay after that.
I am familiar with the clay of the Northeast. And let me tell you something, the sandy loam my house is built on, awesome for digging.
Yeah.
Also awesome for liquefaction in the case of earthquakes, but that is not the subject of this show. This show is computer hardware. And the article that distracted me just seconds before we went live today. Borderlands 2 physics performance and physics comparison. It seems like Borderlands 2 is the game physics accelerators have been waiting for forever. You guys ran a gigantic 4-hour launch event when Borderlands 2 came out. And, you know, physics, you know, which is something I think we had kind of just forgotten about.
Yeah.
You know, oh yeah, it's got physics and transistors.
So it's been a technology that's been around for a long time, but very few games have implemented it in a way that is in any fashion interesting. I remember many, many years ago when we first started hearing about the company, well before AMD owned it, before NVIDIA owned it, where they were talking about what cool things you could do, how you could make every object in your game destructible, and you could interact with any of those types of things. And the problem became hardware integration. This was when they were selling separate physics acceleration cards, right? And that, imagine the day when you had a video card, an audio card, and a physics card in your system. But long story short, NVIDIA bought them. Now it only gets accelerated on NVIDIA GPUs. So, you know, nobody wants to go 100% in with implementing these kind of interesting and cool physics effects because mm-hmm. you're cutting out half of your market, essentially. With that gameplay, and you can't make the game drastically different with NVIDIA cards than it is with AMD. So instead, what we get are a lot of these kind of extra effects, particles, fluids, cloth, those types of things that can add to the ambiance of a game, but they don't really change the gameplay dramatically. Borderlands 2 is one of the better ones in terms of adding a whole bunch of stuff and making it look cool, right? So you'll see if you pick up the game or if you watch the video in our story, you'll see the difference between physics on high, medium, and low. And you'll see, you know, there's cloth on some and no cloth on others. You'll get dynamic fluids on some, but no fluids at all. You'll get particles on some, but a lot more particles that interact in different ways with the environment at high, right? So
I think it's pretty cool. Reviewer. Who was just like, I just spent an entire episode. He's like, I just spent hours in Borderlands 2 shooting tarps. He's like, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah, know, it's
laugh,
cool.
But it's beautiful and it's compelling.
It's cool and it's fun, but you know, you can play without it. So what we did with this was part of the story is the video where we compare yeah, physics on high versus medium versus low. And you can see, if you're watching the video version of it, physics low has some of the stuff, but you'll notice on the high side on the left, there's this gravity effect that's affecting the fluids and the particles in the world, but those don't even exist on the low settings. So you can still play the game on low. It's not that big of a deal, but it's cooler on medium and high, and this is one of the best implementations of it so far. The second half of the story was to compare an AMD card and an NVIDIA card, how much performance degraded as you went from high to medium to low on these physics settings. We ran at 1080p, kind of, you know, max everything else out, and we used the GTX 680 and the 7970 gigahertz edition from AMD just to get the top level stuff from both guys. And what we found was, if you look at the second page of the story, the performance on the AMD card almost perfectly matched the performance of the NVIDIA card when physics was set to low. At low, there's no GPU accelerated physics at all. There's only, it's just CPU based stuff. When you get into medium, you'll see that the performance drops pretty substantially in certain cases. Yeah, if you look at that, you'll see the cases where the red line is well below the blue line, you're seeing these, obviously there's a bottleneck of some kind. And then if we go down to physics on high, you'll see that performance drops off the cliff and never comes back up. And we're talking some pretty dramatic differences. I think with physics on high, the difference is like 66 versus 33 or something like that for the averages. And the explanation we got for this is, while Borderlands 2 will let the CPU attempt to handle the physics processing of these additional particles, the CPU can't quite keep up. And it's not because the CPU is at 100% load. We have some of those graphs on there too. It's that it's not multi-threaded in a way on the CPU that it can be on the GPU. So what you see instead is essentially a single, the physics thread of the game being hindered and having to wait for these other calculations to take place on the CPU. And so as a result, the entire engine kind of stalls out waiting for these things to happen, and your frame rate drops accordingly. So what was interesting to us just from an experiment standpoint is that usually in the past, up until this game, you haven't been able to enable physics at all when you had an AMD card installed. They just kind of disabled it, right? They just said, no, don't even bother trying. This time, well, they would let us enable it and see what happens, and now we get some interesting results to see how it actually affects performance.
And how do you feel about it? I mean, because it's funny, one of the things you've said a couple times is that, you know, there's nothing in here. It's beautiful. It's compelling. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting use of the physics acceleration. But there's really no, there's nothing, there's nothing, it doesn't unlock any aspect of the game other than eye candy.
Correct.
And it looks like, to me, it looks like a relatively minimal impact on frame rates. Or am I just having a bad
day? Well, it's minimal on the NVIDIA side, but it's substantial on the AMD side. Okay. So the debate always comes down to,
oh, there it is. Yeah, physics medium. Sorry.
Yeah.
I was looking at the wrong graph.
Scrolls, yeah. So, but the issue is always, you know, so this physics is an NVIDIA-owned piece of software. It's middleware. To be fair, though, that middleware is used on Xbox games, PlayStation 3 games. You know, it's used in a lot of different engines. But when it comes to the PC, developers have the ability to enable these GPU-accelerated aspects of the game or of the physics engine, and they can. But it's... Mm-hmm. It's at the detriment of AMD products, right? Because they don't support the GPU acceleration. And that is by NVIDIA's choice, right? It's their product. They paid for it. They pay for the development. They, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it makes sense that they're not going to open this up or spend money and resources making sure that it runs well on AMD GPUs. So instead we get, you know, basically, in my opinion, the same status that you had before. If you have an AMD card, you should probably turn physics on low,
right,
and play the game that way. If you have an NVIDIA card, even down to like a 660 or 660 Ti, you can play with the physics on high and you'll get a improved experience, not necessarily better. I guess it's better. It's more interesting, but right, you're not going to miss any of the game or anything like that. So, you know, it's another instance where if you're an AMD fan, you have AMD hardware, you're going to miss out on this, and it sucks, but that's the way it's going to be. It's not going to change.
Yeah. I don't really anticipate, as it seems like to have really good physics development, you need it on both sides of the fence. AMD and NVIDIA, and there's just no way NVIDIA is going to do that, no matter how much better it might
be gaming. If there were a physics engine that was GPU accelerated and would run on both NVIDIA and AMD, I think you could see some really, really cool things. Like the whole idea of the physics engine when it was its own independent company was, imagine, you know, Borderlands 2, where everything you shoot can be destructible. Any buildings can be destructible. Any items can be destructible. And that's, you know, if you have really high physics processing capability, you could be able to do that. But nobody's going to spend the time to develop that type of world that only half of their PC user base to be able to take advantage of.
Well, we're going to be building on the AMD versus the world theme. But before we get into that, let us discuss AMD Trinity, the A10 5800K and the A8 5600K. Josh wrote this up for PCPer.com. Quote, Trinity, where to start? I find myself asking that question as the road to this release is somewhat tortuous. That's a scary way to start a review. You know, expectations for Trinity are high. Trinity APU with AMD discrete class graphics. Everybody, you know, is it safe to say in 2011, late 2010, early 2000, when this name first surfaced, we all thought this is going to be the big Core i5, Core i7 challenger. And then, much to our shock, AMD was like, we're not really going for that part of the market. So AMD last week announces that it's going to be, you know, it beats the Core i3 in certain benchmarks put together by the AMD. And where are we at with this CPU after the full round of benchmark testing in-house at PCPer?
It's really not going to be that much different than Llano, right? So the A8 series of APUs was based on Llano. It was the first consumer APU available. Right. Well, desktop consumer APU. And Trinity really doesn't change a whole lot on that. I think when we first started learning about Llano, we first started learning about that its CPU performance wasn't going to be that great. Mm-hmm. There was the carrot on the stick was Trinity.
Really good graphics on this chip. Really good graphics. Impressive graphics on this chip.
It is easily the best, still the best integrated graphics you can get. If you look at the last two pages of the review, you'll see Borderlands 2 and Skyrim testing. And it's about 20 to 30 to 40% faster than Llano. The new Trinity parts are.
Right.
And it's significantly faster than like the Intel Core i3 Sandy Bridge parts and even the Core i7 Ivy Bridge graphics. It holds a considerable lead over that. That was never really in doubt, though, because the integrated graphics on AMD's parts has always been great. Intel has been catching up, but they've always been better, and that's still the case. I think what a lot of people were hoping for was some improved CPU performance with this part, and that just didn't happen. The new pile driver cores that replaced the bulldozer cores on the first first APU, Llano, don't really add that much to performance. They add some in a select few instances, and they actually are a little bit slower in a couple of select few instances. So it's not going to drastically change the market in terms of low-end processor performance, low-end processors in general. Where Trinity will thrive and possibly be a very successful part is in the same markets that Llano had that chance as well. Mm-hmm. Super mainstream gaming, low-end gaming, right? You're going to build a $300, $400 box that you want to hook up to a TV and use as a home theater PC and play games on it sometimes. It'll also be good just as a home theater PC in general. It has lots of graphics capability. Can take advantage of slightly accelerated GPU transcoding and that kind of stuff as well. And it's super, super low cost. The highest end Trinity part will be $122. I think it's selling for $122 or $125 today. And you can couple that with a $80 motherboard or something like that. And so for $200, you've got your CPU, your GPU, and your motherboard. Add in some low cost memory, get either a really cheap SSD or a low-cost 1 terabyte hard drive or something like that, and you've got a complete system in the $300 to $400 range easily. It's going to be able to handle most anything you want to do. It's not going to blow you away in terms of speed and performance on the CPU side. But if you're going to do mainstream gaming and you can do some interesting stuff with it, we've got a story we'll talk about. I think if we switch it around, we'll talk about it next. We're talking about completely passively cooled systems using Trinity as well. You can do some pretty cool stuff with it. It's not an Ivy Bridge killer. It's not a Sandy Bridge killer. It's not targeted at that. What we're hoping is maybe the desktop CPU only called Vishera, the Trinity-based AMD FX part, will come out, I don't know, maybe in a month or so. And hopefully we'll see some competitive performance there at higher clock speeds. But for now, Trinity is very much taking over the market that Llano had, but a little bit better.
Is there anything else to say? It's like set-top box, good all-around workstation PC. The truth is, you know, maybe I in particular am being unfair to this part, because it's actually most of the jobs I see most people doing on most computers, this actually is more than enough CPU for them. They're not editing video games. They're not doing high-end 3D gaming. They're not trying to support, you know, three simultaneous monitors. You know, if you're a light gamer or just not a 3D gamer at all, and you're primarily dealing, you know, with typical household computing tasks, you know what I mean? This is the perfect, you know, it's a great chip, maybe not the perfect chip for somebody who wants to do a little bit of gaming, doesn't do a lot of high-end computing stuff like video editing or audio editing or, you know, freaking compiling code. It's a nice part. We'll talk about AMD versus Intel in a second. I won't get into that. We should probably go straight to the Samsung Series 840. Alan Malventano for PCPro.com got flown out. Samsung flew Alan and several other industry peeps out to Seoul, Korea, with the 2012 Samsung SSD Global Summit. Basically, in the last couple of weeks, Samsung came out with the 840 Pro, their new top of the line, kind of an incremental evolution from the 830. Higher clock controller, newer, faster flash. So the 830 becomes the 840 Pro and gets all kinds of goodness in terms of performance. The 840 is the consumer marketed, I guess you could almost say the 840 is the new 830 and the 840 Pro is the new high-end 830. But what's interesting about this is the first time we've seen triple-level cell flash used, mass marketed in SSD. So single-level cell is basically one bit. We're basically an individual flash cell can store like one bit. Multi-level cell starts adding a triple-level cell. It's an interesting idea that you can use fewer cells to store more data. The trade-off is that you sacrifice some performance, you sacrifice some long-term reliability. Don't panic. Samsung does very good firmware and they have very, very good products. But write speeds are where things start to suffer. 60 gigabytes, 120 gigabytes, 250, 500 gigabytes. And the specs are sequential reads of 540 megabytes per second, sequential writes at 333 megabytes per second. For the 840 Pro, we're talking about 450 megabytes. We could talk IOPS, but I think it's a little inside baseball for most of us. Alan was, for the most part, impressed. He expects us to get down to like 80 cents a gigabyte once they scale it up. Superb read performance. Reduced cost per gigabyte compared to the 840 Pro, very low power consumption. The cons, quote, relatively poor mixed read-write performance, and it's only coming with a three-year warranty. But then again, most of the people I know are upgrading their drives faster than that. I would also say that I think the drive will probably handily outlast the warranty on that one. MSRP is... Where did it go? 120 gigabytes, $110 for the basic version, $130 for the kit. The 840 Pro, the MSRP is $150. 250 gigabytes, $200 versus $270 for the 840 Pro. And then 500 gigabytes, brace yourselves, $449 or $599.99 for the 840 Pro. Now, I'm going to be the first one to say this. It is slower. In terms of mixed read-write performance, Alan called it relatively poor. But compared to your spinning hard drive, your traditional hard drive, this will still handily destroy it performance-wise. I think it's, you know, is it slower than other SSDs out there? Is it slower than the 840 Pro? Yes. But it will still crush, destroy, obliviate, abuse, or whatever particular, you know, descriptive phrase you want to use compared to a traditional rotating hard drive.
Yeah. I kind of considered this the ideal mainstream kind of just consumer drive. You know, right. It's slow on writes, but it's fast on reads, where most people are going to want that performance. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it will be very low cost, right? That's you know, it's all dependent on that. If it's the same price as a Vertex 4 or whatever, then get a Vertex 4 because it's got fast reads and fast writes. But if it's less expensive and you don't really care about write speeds, then go with whatever's going to be cheaper. And we have a good history with Samsung and their firmware and all that other kind of stuff as well. So I'm hoping once this, it's going to take a couple of months for maybe a month for it to come out and settle at a price, right? It'll mm-hmm. be a little bit higher because it's new and it's cool and everybody's wanting to get their hands on it. So
it's shiny.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm hopeful that this the triple level cell flash will be an answer to cost, at least in the not too distant future.
We hope so. Yeah, and Alan makes it pretty clear in the final thoughts on the review. You know, it's a budget version of the pro level SSD. Quote, triple level cell flash is slower to write and provides less endurance as compared to MLC units. While the 840 does perform quite well as a first-generation TLC SSD, there are several areas where it has no choice but to be outmaneuvered by the MLC-equipped competition. You know, and he points out a few years ago, MLC took a while to catch up performance to SLC.
Precisely.
You know, and this gets back to our classic line, if you're not going to install it today, save your pennies and buy the latest and greatest when you have the money put together to buy it, because in 6 months, there's going to be faster drives for less money, or this drive is going to be available for for less money. Never hurts to wait. So, Silent PC build. This looks really pretty, the Asus Silent PC with the AMD Trinity APU.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking. And we've had a couple of interested parties here looking at it, because it is a completely passively cooled Trinity APU based system. So the processor we were just talking about a second ago. It's built inside a Strecom FC5 chassis, which does double duty as a case and heatsink for the AMD APU. So the case itself is actually, you know, acting as the heatsink on it. If you look at the picture of it, you can see the heat pipes actually go into the body of the case itself. It's actually pretty cool.
The case is gorgeous.
Sized
a media stack in a really nice way.
Yep. I remember seeing some of these cases that would work as passive CPU coolers in the past. The issue was always you had to build for like specific motherboards, right? Because the whole placement of the cooler, if it's built in as part of the chassis, gets to be pretty complicated. So, you know, it's one of those things where you have to double check on your case and your motherboard and everything else that you're working on. But they're also not incredibly cheap. But in terms of cool factor, just nice to look at, as well as super quiet. It doesn't get any quieter than if you get that, you get DIMMs, you get an SSD, you have no mm-hmm. fans in the case. You got a completely passive system. Completely passive, completely silent system, which, right. Is pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, again, obviously I'm obsessed with home theater PCs. It's the side effect of working with Robert Herron. But it's anytime you can eliminate any kind of fan from the home theater room, and of course you could say, like, put it in a delete expletive closet. I get it. That's what I did with my gear. But I love the idea of decent gaming performance and absolutely having no fans, which is pretty awesome. And I got to say, the Strecom chassis are absolutely gorgeous and available in a whole bunch of sizes here in the United States from perfecthometheater.com. And the FC5 starts at, brace yourselves, people, $247.50. And ratchets up to $272. But if you're looking for a full-size box, you can get it down to a more relaxed $180.
Nice.
They're beautiful cases. No, I love the idea. So for so long, like, a home theater PC had to have a display on the front of it.
Right.
And invariably the display was so bright it actually distracted you from your HDTV or your projector. So it's nice to see a little understated design. Pardon me.
Oh, no problem.
Not so understated, Jeremy's discussion on PC Per, why even Intel fans want a stronger showing from AMD. Is it price? Is it performance? Is it new technology? Oh, boy.
So this story, it's actually a little paragraph on our site that links to a story over at techreport.com where they did a really good kind of information gathering bit where they looked at prices over the last couple of years of AMD processors versus last couple of years of Intel processors. And what you'll see is a lack of active competition from AMD has caused Intel's prices to basically stagnate. And it's something we've talked about on the show quite a bit that it's the case, but it's interesting when you see it in a like hard data form, right? Here's the price at Newegg over time, and it drops maybe $10, but nothing other than that, right? Even if you look at a processor like the Core i5 2500K and 2600K, so the best Sandy Bridge processors, they even today have almost not dropped pricing at all. And I think it was another one of the Core i3 2105s or something like that was almost no price drops at the low end or at the mid-range part level, whereas AMD prices continued to drop. They were trying to drop in order to make themselves more competitive with what Intel was putting out. Intel had no reason to, because they knew they were beating the best that AMD could throw at them, so they never dropped prices. And that's, you know, we talk about it a lot here. That's bad for the consumer. It's bad for our markets. It means Intel doesn't have to push technology forward. They're not trying to figure out ways to push frequency. They're not trying ways to push their process technology further in those directions. And overall, it's just it's a bad thing when you have an unhealthy two-party system, I guess, to stay on topic with the the culture as it is now, right? If you only have one player in dominance, they can pretty much do whatever they want. They're not pushed to perform in any kind of fashion. And it was a really good write-up over at Tech Report, just a collection of this data to show you how Intel prices have not changed over time.
That is a problem if you like affordable parts.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is can AMD, I mean, AMD has basically publicly declared that they are no longer going to fight Intel for the high ground, Core i5, the Core i7, the bleeding edge high-performance processors. Because to put it bluntly, they failed. They could not deliver. They could not scale their CPU technology to keep up with Intel. I got to say, I don't really see anybody stepping up to challenge Intel in that area. Call me crazy or
no, you know. There's not. I mean, the only person that it could possibly be would be Intel. And what I think many people fear will happen is that this kind of the consumer desktop space will just stagnate out. It'll get to a point where Intel's like, yeah, we're the best here, but we don't have any competition. There's no point in us developing more. You can already see that a little bit in that their big push into mobile markets, cell phones, tablets, that type of thing. That's where they move their direction to, their focus to, is not on high performance, but on low power. And, you know, that's someplace where they still have competition at, right? Qualcomm, NVIDIA, the whole ARM community is their competition now. That's who they consider their primary competition.
Right. I mean, at this point is there are so few applications that actually constrain a Core i7 CPU. I mean, are there any video games that can even load up all four cores of a Core i7 at this point?
Games? Oh, sure. I mean, you're not going to get to 100% utilization on processors, but if you can get 4 to 6 threads kind of hopping around in the 30-40% range, you're doing pretty good. And there are several games that will do that.
So several games out of the hundreds, if not thousands, currently sold.
Well, you got to think about it. We're at the end of a console game cycle. We're at the end of a console cycle. So these next iterations of consoles will be much more heavily multi-threaded than the ones we have today. And they'll all be based on the same architecture too, which will help. And what you'll see is, you'll see, kind of like we saw at the beginning of the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 launch, almost an equalization, but then you'll see the PC take off again in terms of better performance and better graphics, because as people learn how to use the new hardware for the consoles, they will then take advantage of, kind of use it as practice to shove that stuff onto the PC and get improved stuff there. So because the Xbox 360 only has three cores, and I think, you know, even taking advantage of all of those is pretty hard with the current tools they have, they don't really see a need to go further than that. And to spend the money to develop an engine that can isn't going to give you a whole lot of payback. But future engines, I think, will not have a problem in that area.
We wait with bated breath as computing speeds and application performance stalls.
Yeah.
Exaggerate, people. I think Intel will keep doing it. They'll just spend less money focused on it. It'll be interesting to watch. We'll all be on tablets in a couple of years. I can't think of anything. Actually, I held some tablets today that would be very compelling, but oddly enough, they all had like Core i5s and Core i7s inside of them.
There you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, our first viewer question of the day, and before I get to it, let me say subscribe to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, TWICH, that is twit.tv/Twitch, if you want to track down the links to subscribe to the show, or search for This Week in Computer Hardware on iTunes or any of your other favorite podcatchers. Email us twitch@twit.tv if you want to ask us a question, or fire your Twitters out to @RyanShroud or @PatrickNorton on the Twitter. And right now, joining us, not from Texas, but from Petaluma, California, Chad Johnson, you may know him as OMG Chad, is looking to build his very first gaming PC.
I am. I'm really excited about this one, and I needed y'all's help.
We should point out there is one major constraining factor on this build. The number one most important factor for Chad's build because of what he wants it to do. Not that it's a gaming PC, not that it's an editing rig, not that it's a streaming box, but that you want it to be a Hackintosh.
A Hackintosh. I didn't want to spend Apple prices for an Apple rig.
That's so understandable.
So yeah. So the things that I really want to do with this is game. I would like to have a really good processor to transcode video. So once I make it into a Hackintosh that I can use its processing power to transcode my videos way faster, and then maybe do some Let's Plays, that sort of thing.
Right.
And then in terms of cost, I'm thinking around the $2,000 area because I'm going to be using it for work and for play. I don't mind spending a little bit extra because I'm going to be doing actual work that makes me money back later on it. Hopefully.
That is an important thing.
Right.
So right. I assume you spent a little quality time up at tonymacx86.blogspot.com.
Exactly, I did. And I was originally going to go for an ASUS motherboard, and then poking around TonyMacx86, that was kind of a no-go. It's either it's Gigabyte or get out, pretty much, in terms of the Hackintosh scene. And so I switched to a Gigabyte board, and I was happy with that because I wanted a FireWire port on the motherboard. I didn't really want to buy a PCI Express, you know, FireWire thing. And so it has a FireWire 400 on it, so I was a little bit happier about that. And then I kind of reached my limit, and I asked Reddit and my Twitter followers what they thought of my build. So I actually sent it to the fans. This was actually before I knew that I'd be getting your advice. Way better advice than I expected. And so I sent that to Reddit.
I was going to say Reddit's pretty smart.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Reddit out there, and they have a lot of good answers. It's funny, you know, the comments on Reddit use multi-bees for the install, for parts, of course. This is like the first post from iEnthusiast. You know, go to tonymacx86.blogspot.com. If you've never if you've never been there, if you're building a Hackintosh, one of the first places to go is tonymacx86 because he keeps a list of up-to-date hardware options for building a Hackintosh. Because if you don't choose the right motherboard, as Chad has found out, much to his shock and dismay, you know, it's not really about the motherboard you want. It's about the motherboard that will actually boot the version of OS 10 that you want to install. You know, have you changed? I noticed we got some comments on memory options.
Right.
Because you were looking at Corsair Vengeance 4 4 gigabyte sticks.
Right. That's almost exactly what I wanted to ask you guys about. The comments back that I got were that Right now, so just a quick rundown of some of the things I have. I have a Gigabyte motherboard. I'm using 4 DIMMs of 4 gigabyte memory. I have a solid state drive and a 1.5 terabyte spinning drive. And then my video card, I went with the GTX 680 from EVGA. Then I just liked, there's a case that Corsair makes that is very military, and I just kind of like that. And then a 750 watt power supply. And that's all the interesting stuff. And based off of the PC Per article about the South Korean monitors, I decided to go with the $300 1440 monitor from South Korea. So I'm going to get one.
Have you ordered that yet?
I haven't ordered it yet.
Okay.
I haven't ordered anything yet. This is actually tomorrow morning will be when I sit down and find and bite the bullet and see my bank account just shrink and shrink and shrink.
Yes. Right. That is when you've crossed the line into almost no return.
Right.
So, you know, the motherboard selection we'll say has to be there in order for the Hackintosh mentality there, and it's a fine board anyway. The processor is the top Ivy Bridge you can get in terms of, you know, if the only way you could get faster is if you get into X79, Sandy Bridge E stuff, but I probably wouldn't recommend that anyway. 16 gigs of memory is a lot. The only thing I might look at is if you can get 2x8 instead of 4x4. And just in case you want to add more later. If you're going to do video editing and that kind of stuff, you never really know where you're going to go with that. And if you can upgrade to 2x8s for close to the same price, I might do that.
That was a Reddit comment, and I definitely think I'm going to do that. That was something I didn't even think about. I just thought, I have 4 DIMM slots, so let's go with four things.
Yeah, well, the whole I need to fill all my DIMM slots, like, it's just not what it used to be.
right.
And the 8 gigabyte sticks actually are relatively inexpensive. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead, Brian.
No, I was going to say, I was just moving on, but the Samsung 830 is a great drive. 256 gig would give you enough for your OS and games and applications and that kind of stuff. The spindle hard drive, it's up to you. I don't know how much, you know, if you're doing video editing, do you have an external backup configuration already set up? Is this going to be at the Twit Studio?
This is not. So this is my personal machine. So the spindle drive was what I was expecting to put the Mac operating system on, and that's where I would be doing all of the video transcoding. And I've had finicky success with the eSATA cables to my hard drive docks. I'm using a hard drive toaster just to drop in hard drives, and I've had such finicky success with that I expected that I would use the FireWire 400 cable to transfer the video, transcode it, and then retransfer it back to an archive drive.
I wish there was a Thunderbolt adapter card, because the more I play around, as much as $50 cables make me want to pound my head against the nearest wall or desk, Thunderbolt is so fast, and it's such a good physical cable. Like, the issue you're running into is eSATA. SATA's a mediocre cable. Like, it's not bad if it's a light cable. It's inside a PC and you're not moving it. As soon as they took that cable design outside the PC, I think it just all of the flaws started to reveal themselves.
Just so you know, Ken just brought this over to me. We have one here, and he said that this motherboard is Hackintosh certified, or people have been using it. This is the Z77X UP5TH, and it has 2 Thunderbolt ports on it.
Get it, Jack.
So now it's going to be more expensive, and then you're going to have to worry about getting Thunderbolt accessories as well, which are going to be pretty expensive.
That's okay.
The only other option would be to use your USB 3.0 port as an external solution.
Yeah.
Assuming OS 10 will recognize USB 3.0.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that may not.
That's kind of true.
And Ken said that this will work, like the Thunderbolt ports should work on the OS. So, and Intel, it does have Intel-based USB 3, so it should work on
that's exciting.
Drives as well.
Do you happen to know, does that have a... At the moment, what I'm using is this laptop, and I'm using the FireWire 800 and port out. And that happens to be fast enough for editing the video straight off the drive. Do you happen to know if that board has a FireWire 800 as well? Because I could switch to Thunderbolt if I needed to. It would be another investment in drives.
Does have it an does? IEEE 1394 port. I'm really surprised by that, actually. I thought for sure I was going to have to tell you no, but it does. Gigabyte is one of the few companies that still does that, and I think it might be because of the Hackintosh crowd, to be completely, completely honest with you. It is going to be a more expensive motherboard. I was just going to look it up, so I don't know about how specific
your budget is. That's such a crucial part of the entire build is the media transcoding. I mean, it takes up to 16 hours to transcode the video that I want to do, and that's unacceptable. So that's such a crucial part of this build that's doable.
The
$60 more
is totally doable. And what I was about to say is that would probably allow me to downgrade that the Mac OS hard drive to not need a whole terabyte and a half. I could probably get away with, another 256. I have a few 80 gigabyte hard drives that would probably run just fine.
They could, yeah. If you're not worried about IO performance on that particular partition, another SSD would be great, just in terms of improving your overall user experience in the Mac OS as well. But it's cheaper too.
Do you care about overclocking? In which case, you might use a 3770 instead of a 3770K. 2 8 gigabyte sticks of Corsair will run you about $20 less at Newegg to still get to the 16 gigabytes of memory. I think of where else.
The other thing that
pretty good machine,
that was pointed out on Reddit, which I had not read enough reviews up to that point, is that I knew that I would be spending around $500 for a video card. And then they pointed out that I was choosing the 680, that the 670 can be clocked really close to the 680. And I was just like, well, 4 gigabytes is bigger than 2 gigabytes. So I'm going to go with the 680. But after reading those reviews, I'm really compelled to jump.
I think, the 680 is a great card. 680 4 gig is really for if you're going to do multi-monitor gaming. That's really when a 4 gig frame buffer has really become important. I think even on that 27-inch 2560 by 1440 monitor, a 670 is going to be plenty. And you can get those for like $399, so you could take $160 off your price right there. If you're overclocking these boards is really simple as well. And you can, if you get an EVGA or a Galaxy card, Asus, MSI, actually they all kind of come with their own overclocking software. It's real easy to do as well if you want to do kind of creep it up a little bit closer to the 680 performance levels. And you can pay for that different motherboard by taking a little bit off the graphics card at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
By the way, I got to say the Tactical Case, the Vengeance C70 from Corsair, one, love the style. Two, already has 320mm fans loaded in it, so you're not going to need to spend any money on fans unless you want to quiet the machine down. I like that. That's a really neat case, by the way.
I chose it practically purely on style. I like that it had handles, and if I ever needed to take it somewhere in a pinch, I could handle it. I have it on my screen. It has this really cool gunmetal look to it. It just screamed of something I needed.
It's a cool case, and don't feel bad. Most case selections are done by aesthetics anyway.
Right.
Unless you have a really, really specific use case for it.
I need 9 gigantic 5.25-inch drives that are accessible from the front of the case.
Right, exactly. Something unique like that. Overall, though, I think a really good build. If you're interested in the motherboard, the model number, I can email it to you after the show. Z77X UP5TH. The TH standing for Thunderbolt. Get it? I don't know. And it's got 2 Thunderbolt ports on it. It's actually one of the first motherboards to have dual Thunderbolt outputs on it too. So there's a lot of expandability options there. Power supply is good. 750 watts Corsair Pro Golds are great power supplies. 750 is more than enough. And then the Vengeance K60, the only thing I'll make sure you they are loud keyboards. So if you're going to do streaming like with a headset on,
I did not think about that.
Because the clicking can be pretty obnoxious.
You are right.
We're actually using Microsoft Soft Touch keyboards for that kind of stuff, only because the keys are kind of annoying when they get picked up by a boom mic.
You're right. I'm gonna have to nix that. Yeah. The one of the reasons that the memory is so high is that I do a lot of Minecraft gaming, and I can easily send Minecraft 4-8 gigabytes of memory to be super smooth. And the idea was this rig would allow me to do those let's plays, the play along sort of videos. And yeah, that motherboard, that keyboard is not gonna fly. I'm gonna have to kill that.
Yeah, yeah. Anything that has cherry keys is gonna
right.
potentially be
and
frustrating.
I've even used that keyboard. We reviewed it here, and it was just such a comfortable keyboard. I knew that I was getting the clicking stuff. I just didn't think about actually streaming with it and how ridiculous it would be.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you can always own a second inexpensive, less tactile keyboard that you plug in when you're streaming, or
that's what we do. Like, we have them, and we have two. They're both plugged in all the time. We just kind of swap it whenever.
Perhaps a quiet Apple Bluetooth keyboard with a command key. Something subtle.
Right.
So
nice.
Right. Are you excited? Are you going to build it? Can we
help
you build it?
I'm so excited. So actually, Iaz already grabbed me, and because he saw my Twitter post and went, well, this needs to be a know-how episode. So I'm going to buy everything tomorrow morning. With the new motherboard is a definite. I'm going to switch out that graphics card. I'm going to get the 2 DIMMs instead of 4 DIMMs of memory, and that keyboard just won't get bought. So I'm really glad that I talked to you guys, because I knew that I was probably doing something wrong. I didn't realize how much I was doing wrong. So
no, it was a good overall build. It was good.
Thanks.
I think you'll be happy, and yeah, you're gonna have a lot of I don't know what you're upgrading from to this, but this is basically the fastest kind of consumer gaming PC you can buy, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I needed
you could go SLI and all the other crazy stuff, but
I needed it to almost do everything, because it needed to edit video, it needed to game, and it needed to stream, and I knew it was going to be expensive, but it just kind of is a tool that I needed to use for everything.
That's always the way of the tools.
Right.
I need one tool to do it all. Chad, a pleasure as always, sir.
Thank you.
Posted. We want pictures of the final build.
We'll do. We'll do. One thing I'm not doing is I'm not going LED crazy. I can't stand the cold cathode ray tubes and stuff. I'm not going.
Oh, lighting inside your case and stuff?
I'm not doing that. No. It's going to be dark. It's not. And yeah.
I think
not
you're
doing
several
that.
Years late for that trend.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
We are about to run out of time, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to do more of your viewer questions next week. So, Ryan, what is coming up? Exciting, actually, week on PC Purr. Not that it's never not an exciting week on PC Purr.
there's a lot of really
exciting stuff. Hey, I'm on your website a lot.
We've got, there's going to be a new graphics card release again next week. Go figure. It'll be on the low end side, though, the very budget conscious side. So stay tuned for that if you're interested in that. We're going to have reviews of a couple different motherboards, one of them being Thunderbolt based, this one actually from MSI. And we're going to do a couple more reviews of systems. We've got a small form factor mini ITX system with a GTX 680 in it. And we just got a system in, shipped into us, in a big wooden crate. That's how you know you're getting something good, when it comes in a wooden crate. And it's a Origin PC with dual GTX 690s.
Nice. We're keeping it fairly simple at Techzilla. We just did talk about Samsung's Textiles, which can turn, they're stickers that turn any object into a device that supports near field communications. We talked projectors versus large screens, and why you don't really need to spend a lot of money on a physical screen for your projector. And we have some fun with Pelican, the case manufacturers decided they wanted to do a consumer brand because apparently Pelican doesn't have an awesome enough consumer reputation as it is, Pelican being the case manufacturer.
Right.
And they did a crush-proof notebook, the Urban Elite U100, and I had some quality time with that.
Like a laptop?
No, a backpack with basically, it's a backpack.
Oh, okay.
Backpack with a Pelican case for your notebook built in.
Awesome.
Yes, yeah. Actually, there's just one flaw. It is awesome, but there is one flaw.
All right.
And we talk about that on the Tech Show. So that's it for this edition of Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware. Twitch at twit.tv is the email. We'll have the usual slate of emails next week. And hopefully, in the near future, a report from Chad and House Hackintosh Bill Prince. That's it for this edition of Twitch. I'm Patrick Gorton.
I'm Ryan Trout.
See you next week on Twitch.